Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
One bit of news that maybe a lot of you care about, given his long-range career trajectory of dominance. Roger Federer right now in the fifth set against an Australian by the last name of Millman, who I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know anything at all about. That fifth set right now tied up at two games apiece already. Eddie Garcia, you can be an expert on this. Already we've seen a couple of upsets down in the Australian Open late night that may have surprised many of you if you care about tennis. Serena Williams has lost and Naomi Osaka on the women's side have lost. And again, Roger Federer serving right now in the fifth set down in the Australian Open. Just went up three games to two, I believe, or close to it, in the fifth set down in Australia. And I'm correct about that, right, Eddie Garcia, in terms of two big upsets that happened overnight in the Australian Open?
Yeah, it's John Millman of Australia, unseeded player that's really pushing Roger Federer right now. As you mentioned, in that fifth set, they're tied at 2-2. And 15-year-old American Coco Gauff knocking off the defending champ Naomi Osaka at the Australian Open in the big upset of the day. And Serena Williams also out in the third round as well.
Yeah, and we're actually headed to a deuce here in a 2-2 match between Roger Federer and this Millman guy down in Australia. The other big news for those of you waking up is that I think maybe surprises some people, at least on the way that this happened. Antonio Brown turned himself in late last night around 10 o'clock Eastern down in Florida, in Hollywood, Florida, and he spent the night in jail. He has not yet appeared before a judge and been able to post bail. And so as a result, there's a mugshot up, and Antonio Brown spent the night in jail. And also, I think this is kind of wild. Last week, they had put up odds on whether Antonio Brown would be arrested or not in 2020. And the odds were 7-1 that he would not be arrested. And a week later, he now has been arrested. So if you were smart enough to hop in and jump down in that one, you are now in great shape. In that universe. In hour two, if you just started off with us, we had a really fun conversation with Dan Wetzel about the Aaron Hernandez documentary that has taken flight on Netflix and become so wildly popular. Took some calls on that to finish off hour two. Encourage you to go listen to the entire podcast, Wins and Losses, on that story. If you are going to be watching that documentary potentially over the weekend or you've already watched it, Dub, we played a little bit of that conversation, but you heard the whole thing. It's pretty wild if you listen to the documentary to get to dive into that that podcast interview as well. A lot of people out there, I think, would enjoy that.
Yeah, that was just a little taste. It's about an hour and a half long, and it is just absolutely riveting hearing Dan Wetzel and you's conversation, you know, just going in depth about, you know, the documentary itself, the case, both cases, the Jose Baez angle. I mean, everything about it is just so riveting and intriguing. And it's definitely a must watch for the documentary, A, and then a must listen, B, for this podcast with Dan Wetzel.
And again, if you are not familiar with the podcast universe, and I don't know what percentage of people actually listen to podcasts on a regular basis, but you obviously, if you're listening to us right now, are very familiar with the Outkick universe. I can't tell you how much you will like that Wins and Losses podcast exclusive about it with a variety of people, whether it's Kirk Herbstreit, Mike Leach, Paul Feinbaum, Colin Cowherd, Jason Whitlock, These are long-form interviews. The founder of 24/7 Sports, Shannon Terry, one of the co-founders of the Bleacher Report, Dave Finocchio. I mean, a wide variety of interesting conversations that I'm telling you guys you will really enjoy if you dive into them and give yourself a chance to listen to those. But the latest one, and it just went up yesterday, is Dan Wetzel, who is an executive producer on this Aaron Hernandez documentary, who covered both of the trials, and it's a big discussion about that story in general. Additional stories that are underway. I have been making the argument for a couple days now since news broke that Eli Manning was going to retire, that he's a no-brainer Hall of Famer. And we started off the show in hour one with a couple of facts that I thought were pretty wild. Going back and looking at how number one draft picks have performed in the NFL. And I was thinking about this last night because Eli Manning, obviously, number one draft pick who ended up playing with the New York Giants after initially being drafted by the then San Diego Chargers. You go all the way back to 1972. That's almost 50 years of draft picks who have gone number one overall. Only four overall number one draft picks at the quarterback position have actually gone on to win Super Bowls. Again, that's a stat that I think is blowing a lot of people's minds this morning. Nearly 50 years we've had number one overall picks be drafted. The only four number one overall drafted picks at quarterback who have won Super Bowls as starters. Some of them may have won as backups at some point in their career, but as starters, John Elway, Troy Aikman, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning. And just to reiterate for everybody out there, Eli, I believe, is by far the most successful number one overall first-round quarterback and first-round pick number one overall in general in the 21st century. And a lot of you might be saying, what are you talking about, Clay? Listen to this. Since 2000, here are the draft picks. Tell me that Eli is not the best of these, which is why I think he's a no-brainer to make the Hall of Fame. Courtney Brown, first pick of the 21st century back in 2000. Michael Vick, David Carr, Carson Palmer, Eli Manning, Alex Smith, Mario Williams, Jamarcus Russell, Jake Long, Matthew Stafford, Sam Bradford, Cam Newton, Andrew Luck, Eric Fisher, Jadeveon Clowney, Jameis Winston, Jared Goff, Myles Garrett, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray. Now, some of these guys are still in the early parts of their career, but that is, I think, pretty strong evidence of Eli Manning being the best of all of the 21st century number one overall draft picks so far, and certainly he's the only quarterback in the 21st century to have won a Super Bowl thus far in his career. We'll see whether anybody else can manage to do it. And also, on top of that, when you think about the Eli Manning performance, what is particularly intriguing, again, I come back to, is 16 straight years as the starting quarterback. If you knew right now that Joe Burrow was going to go for 16 straight years, or Tua Tagovailoa, or Jake Fromm, or any other player that may well go in the first round, Justin Herbert, and win two Super Bowls and be Super Bowl MVP twice as well, while being top 10 in passing yards and top 10 in touchdowns, is there any way you wouldn't sign up for that in a heartbeat? Joe Burrow is going to be the overall number one pick in 2020. Bengal fans would be ecstatic if you told them right now Joe Burrow is going to start for 16 straight years for you. He's going to win you two Super Bowls, and he's going to be top 10 all time in passing yards and touchdowns and be Super Bowl MVP twice. They would sign up for that in a heartbeat. They'd be doing cartwheels all over the city of Cincinnati. Same thing would be true of the Miami Dolphin fans if you expect, as I do, that Tua is going to go number five overall to the Miami Dolphins. That's my expectation right now. But to further put Eli in context as we get ready for what I think is going to be a pretty tough goodbye for Eli Manning, as I think it'll be a very emotional press conference later today. Here's a stat for you as well. if you want Eli in context. Let me give you somebody who is an unquestioned Hall of Famer. 56.9% completion percentage. Threw for 51,475 yards, 300 touchdowns, 226 INTs, two Super Bowl wins, one Super Bowl MVP. Who did I just give you the stats for? That's John Elway. All right? John Elway, I don't think anybody out there is doubting, first ballot NFL Hall of Famer. All right? How about John Elway compared to Eli Manning? Eli Manning completion percentage, 60.3. John Elway, 56.9. So Eli, higher completion percentage. Total passing yards, 57,023 for Eli, 51,475 for John Elway. Touchdowns. John Elway, 300 passing touchdowns. Eli, 366 passing touchdowns. INTs, Eli threw more INTs, 244 to 226. Not that much different. People say, well, it's a different era of football. Eli Manning averaged 34 pass attempts per game in his career with the New York Giants. John Elway averaged 31 pass attempts per game in his career with the Denver Broncos. Each man won two Super Bowls. Eli was twice a Super Bowl MVP. John Elway was one Super Bowl MVP. Eli, by the way, one of five players ever to win multiple Super Bowl MVPs. The others, Tom Brady has four, Joe Montana has three, as does Bart Starr and Terry Bradshaw, who have two. Bring in the crew quickly here. Does that stun you that Eli has better stats than John Elway?
Yeah, actually it does. I would think Elway had better numbers than that. No, we didn't even bother you with this yesterday, Clay, because when Daniel Jones first got the starting nod and Eli got benched, we argued way back then that Jim Plunkett had the same exact career as Eli Manning. So do you, and that was on a lot of the talk shows yesterday, do you agree that 80s sensation Plunkett should also be in with two Super Bowl wins?
I need to look at his data. You know, off the top of my head, I'd have to look at all the data. I'm not a Jim Plunkett expert. Dub, does that surprise you that Eli has better stats career than John Elway?
Not really. I mean, he played 16 years and never missed a start, so you're going to have some good numbers. My only thing with Eli, and why I personally, if I had a vote, would not vote him in, I mean, I don't think he was ever even the best quarterback in his own division throughout his entire career. I would take Tony Romo over him. Donovan McNabb at his peak.
Stop.
I think was
pro- yep. Stop.
It's true.
Yep. Donovan McNabb was not better than Eli Manning.
I think he was.
No, he was not.
No one ever went to play, went to face Eli Manning and
Tony
was
Romo.
Yeah, nobody was ever scared
better
of Eli.
Than Eli. Tony Romo is not better than
I would
Eli.
Strongly disagree.
Tony Romo won, what, two playoff games in his entire career?
If I had to pick a quarterback and my two options were Tony Romo and Eli Manning, I would choose Tony Romo if my life was on the line.
You would die. Eddie Garcia, you are a hater. Does it surprise you that Eli has better stats career-wise than John Elway?
Eli sucks.
I like how you start that off by calling me a hater just because I disagree with you. It does surprise me.
No, not because you disagree with me, because you hate Eli.
I don't hate Eli. Yeah. I'm indifferent to Eli. I just.
Eli Manning's career stats dunk all over John Elway's career stats.
But Dub is right. I mean, Eli was never even, I don't think, top five at his position throughout his career. I know he had Brady and Breeze, but I mean, Rodgers, who else am I leaving out there? Roethlisberger. I take all those guys over Eli.
Peyton Manning. Yeah, there's a lot of good quarterbacks. I don't understand why you have to be, if you agree that John Elway is a pretty good quarterback, and every single person out there, I don't think there's a single person listening to us right now unless, like, John Elway, I'm trying to think of something John Elway could have done to you personally for you not to believe that John Elway should be a Hall of Famer. Eli has a better completion percentage, threw for more yards, more touchdowns, threw about the same amount of attempts per game, and won the same amount of Super Bowls and won one more Super Bowl MVP. This is a no-brainer. Anyone arguing otherwise, a hater like Eddie Garcia.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We're joined now by Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan. And Jim, we were just talking about NFL overall number one draft picks. First of all, thanks for coming on with us. I know it's a busy time up on Capitol Hill.
You bet.
Do you buy into Joe Burrow?
It's a slow time for you if you're taking out, if you want to take some member of Congress, but I look forward to it.
Do you buy into Joe Burrow as a number one overall pick for the Cincinnati Bengals? You think he's going to be good?
Heck yeah. He's from Ohio too, so you got to like that. But what we saw in the playoffs, I mean, you know, holy cow! I'm no football expert, but jeepers, every seemed like every pass he put it in the right spot. So yeah, it was an amazing performance. I certainly think he will be.
What'd you think about the officiating in the Ohio State Clemson game?
Yeah, you got to wonder about that targeting call because that's an important moment in the game, and did that really impact momentum? It sure seemed like it did. Of course, if you're a Buckeye fan, you know it did. Look, those things happen in sports. My background's in the sport of wrestling. There are times the referee makes a call, particularly when your boy's wrestling, that you're not too pleased at. But that's all part of the game.
You went to Wisconsin, right, as a wrestler?
I did.
So who do you root for between Wisconsin and Ohio State? Like when the Big Ten title game was being played, you're obviously a congressman in Ohio now. And I know you coached at Ohio State for a while, but who do you root for?
I root for the Badgers. I don't say that loudly, although I guess I just did. But you got to root for where you went to school. I love the Badgers. Badgers football, Badgers hockey, Badgers women's volleyball, and, of course, Badgers wrestling. But, so I root for the Badgers, particularly when I'm around my three brother-in-laws who are all Ohio State grads. I got to root for the Badgers. But it hasn't been the best experience of late since the Buckeyes keep winning the Big Ten championship and beating the Badgers.
Are you a Baker Mayfield believer?
Heck yes. Our son, our oldest boy, and his wife live in Cleveland, and more importantly, with our granddaughter, one of our granddaughters. And last year, he sent me a text, Ben did, and he sent me this text. He said, "I just read this online. He said, this is so Cleveland," because all the text said, all the online message said was, "Baker Mayfield, greatest quarterback of all time." And that's, the folks in Cleveland love the way he plays the game. So, heck yeah, I like Baker Mayfield.
So you're not what about Odell? Did you see some of the craziness of Odell down in, he's evidently paying players on the field? And then, it was a big storyline in general. Are you a believer in Odell and the Baker combo?
Yeah, and then I think. I mean, I didn't get a chance to, it didn't seem like he got as many passes as you would have hoped this year. But, I want the Browns to win. I grew up in the 70s, and this would get me in trouble, too. I grew up in the 70s, so I was a big Red Machine fan. But when they had, Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, Johnny Vance, Tony Pierce, you can name them all because they played the same players every year. It was just an amazing team. But like any kid, you root for the winner. So my favorite player in football was Jack Lambert, middle linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Kent State guy, I love the Steelers and the – that'll get me in trouble with all the Browns people, but loved the Steelers in the 70s when they were winning everything. So that was my goal. I knew, when you're a kid, you got life figured out.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to play middle linebacker in the NFL, but the good Lord had other designs because I'm 5'7" and a half on a good day. So I had to stick with the sport of wrestling.
What's the craziest thing you ever did to make weight in wrestling?
Well, you had to cut some weight, and it's unfortunately part of the game because, you got to be lean. You want to be at your most competitive weight. And then I always say God didn't make the weight classes. Human beings did. So your best wrestling weight may be 138, but the weight classes in college are 134 and 142. So you got to figure out what you're going to do. And for me, that's just why I was 134 pounder. So yeah, you got to cut some weight, but you get used to it. And that's just part of the game. And then you go compete after you make the weight, and you hope you win.
We're talking to Jim Jordan, Ohio Congressman. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim_Jordan. He's got a million Twitter followers there. Jim, I'm curious on this. We have been talking a lot in the world of sports in general about the baseball cheating scandal. What came out of Houston, the fact that they were stealing signals and everything else. And at times it feels like baseball has not necessarily been giving us the full story. And we saw that before with the steroids era, and the Mitchell report came out, and the House got involved, and there were hearings. And I know you're on, I believe, the Oversight Committee now.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Does that have any appeal? Does any part of you think, hey, I'd like to have some of these baseball executives and be able to put them under oath and actually find out what's going on with the sign stealing and everything else. I mean, you guys were big in kind of blowing up the steroid scandal in baseball in general. Is this something that you think there might be a role for in Congress?
No, I mean, I hope not. I mean, you know, Congress, we have a pretty good track record of making, you know, screwing things up even worse. So I hope not. You're right, though. There were the hearings. That was actually my first term in Congress. I remember we had some of the player. I'm drawing a blank on the great Texas pitcher. Pitch for the Astros.
Roger Clemens.
Clemens came in and he told this story about, you know, B12 shots and all this stuff. It seemed kind of strange for Congress to be sitting there listening to this when we got a huge debt problem and taxing issues and border security issues that we frankly need to be dealing with now. So I kind of hope we don't. But that's going to be the Democrats' call here in the House, and if they have hearings or not. But let's let baseball figure that out, and maybe we can focus on actually doing things we all campaigned. I don't think any of us campaigned on addressing issues in Major League Baseball, so hopefully we won't actually have those kind of hearings.
When you go around the country and you talk to people, a variety of different backgrounds, how often does the world of sports allow you to connect? Maybe in an era of hyper-polarization, one of the things that I like to still believe is that sports is kind of a unique fabric that unites people, whether it is Democrats, Republicans. I mean, I said before you came on, we had Tulsi Gabbard on. People enjoyed hearing her talk about sports, even if you might not agree on a lot of different issues. How often still in Congress do you find yourself maybe occasionally talking across the aisle with people who might not have a lot in common with politically, but everybody tends to be, I think, oftentimes sports fans?
No, all the time, because that's the beauty of sports. It's the place where, you know, Americans can go to get away from politics and some of the divisive issues, and you want to watch the game. You want to watch people compete. You want to watch people who set goals and work hard and try to accomplish something. I mean, there's a reason we have sports in our academic and educational settings, because it's the values they teach. I say this all the time. I've said it in speeches all the time. I think about people who impacted my life. And if you're like most people, next to your parents, it was probably a coach or teacher you had along the way. And for me, it was my high school wrestling coach. I mean, I tell people he was the toughest coach. I think he was the toughest wrestling coach in the whole state of Ohio. And I know he was the toughest teacher in our school. He taught chemistry and physics. And this is no exaggeration, Clay. He talked about discipline every single day. I mean, in class, he'd say, Jordan, this is not any class, this is chemistry class. More importantly, it's my chemistry class. And you want to do well in here, you're going to have to prepare, you're going to do the experiment. And then in the wrestling room, he was every single day, I can still hear him, discipline's the most important character quality you need to accomplish anything and meaning to reach any goal for yourself or a team. And I was like, well, that guy, shut up. Sounds like my dad. You know, I get it every day from my dad, and I get it from my coach. But he had our high school, wrestling is the big sport. My brother's coached there forever. And there's a saying, the coach passed away a few years back, but in our wrestling room, all the state championship banners, I mean, the biggest banners, Coach McCunn's statement where he says, discipline is doing what you don't want to do when you don't want to do it. And that was his, those are the kind of lessons and values you learn in sports. And it's different in politics. And yeah, we talk about those kind of things all the time. And it's that's why I like sports so much, because of the things it teaches people.
Yeah, that's what I try to tell my kids now, and certainly sports can be a window into the soul at times, and also an important life lesson. Do you think you would have had the success in politics that you have if you didn't have the foundation in athletics that you have?
No way. I wouldn't have been confident enough to even put my name on a ballot and run. I mean, look, you know how it is. There's something about when you put on the uniform and you go out there and compete. The risk, I tell people all the time, the first thing you got to be willing to do is take the risk of losing. So many people in life, they kind of want to achieve goals, but they don't want to commit to the effort, commit to the work you need to accomplish something. So, and the sport I was involved in, it doesn't get any more basic than that. I mean, you walk out there in front of God and everybody in this arena, and you shake hands, and there's only one or two outcomes. You're either going to win or you're going to get your tail kicked. And it's like, so you sort of learn to compete. And I tell folks now that I'm old, the closest thing I get to wrestling is when I'm in a committee hearing and I'm mad at some person in government I think has been ripping off the taxpayers I represent. That's the closest I get to a wrestling match when I get a chance to go after them when I think they've done something wrong.
We're talking to Congressman Jim Jordan, and I appreciate you joining us here. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim_Jordan. Do you think you learned more in your sports career from winning or losing?
Well, definitely losing. Definitely. I mean, I was fortunate enough, I had a great coach, and my mom and dad did so much for us. My dad helped us, but I was able to win the state tournament all 4 years in high school. But I'd set a goal of not losing a high school, you know, match, and wound up losing one. Lost it my senior year. And I tell people that's the best thing that ever happened to me. Got me ready to, you know, for, you know, how much tougher college wrestling was going to be. And frankly, it helped our team. Midway through my senior year when I got beat, I don't know that was the first state championship team we ever had at our high school. And since then, they've won 21 state championships, 19 in a row when my brother was coaching. And I tell folks, if I hadn't lost, I'm not sure we'd have won, because it brought our team together and we wound up, you know, as a team winning, which was more important. So, yeah, you definitely learn more from the setbacks. Still wish I'd have won. I'm still pissed that I lost, but it was good for me. And then, you know, I lost several times in college, but that loss in high school helped a lot as I was heading off to college to compete.
Congressman Jim Jordan with us. A couple of questions that we've got here. I'm curious what you think. I've been reading these stories about Jeff Bezos having his phone mm-hmm. hacked by potentially Saudi Arabia. How troubling to you, regardless of partisanship, is the idea of individual privacy kind of being sometimes overtaken based on the technology that surrounds us today? This seems to me to be a really troubling issue, no matter what your political leanings might be. And frankly, it's downright scary, I think, for a lot of people who have their entire lives in their phones, to think that people could be hacking them like Saudi Arabia may have done for Jeff Bezos. And if it can happen to him, the richest man basically in the world almost, it seems like it could happen to anybody.
No, it scares me to death. Think of the context, Clay. A few years ago, the IRS targeted people for their political beliefs. Just a couple years ago, we saw what the FBI did. We had a report from the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, who said when they went to the secret court to get the warrant to spy on American citizens associated with President Trump's campaign, they lied to the court 17 times. And now we have this facial recognition technology. We have the ability. It is scary. This to me is the biggest issue. And frankly, where we should, in a bipartisan way, the Tulsi Gabbards and Jim Jordans of the world, we should be able to get together and say, look, this has got to stop. And we have to, again, put in place the protections for First Amendment liberties, Fourth Amendment liberties. I'm very nervous about this, and particularly this facial recognition stuff. I mean, the left and right should be nervous about if the government can use this technology and find out who's at this political rally, who's at the pro-gun rally, and then who's at the Women's March rally, and just by looking at your face, the government's not allowed to walk in and, like, at some political event and say, hey, give me your thumb. I want to roll it across this and get your fingerprint. They're not allowed to walk into an event and say, hey, show me your ID. But if they can scan everyone's face and figure out who's there and then use that in some way, that's frightening stuff. So I'm very nervous about it.
We're talking to Congressman Jim Jordan. He's with Ohio. Tell me what's going on with impeachment. I'm going to be honest with you. I have paid almost no attention to it because it feels to me like if you told me who was going to win between the 49ers and the Super Bowl that we got going on between the 49ers and the Chiefs in advance, I wouldn't really feel the need to sit down and watch the game if you told me exactly how it was going to play out. It seems to me that where you serve in the House, we knew the Democrats were going to impeach. It seems to me that the Republicans who have the majority in the Senate are going to vote not to remove Donald Trump from office. What am I missing there? I know you've obviously been very involved in that, but is that kind of where you feel like we already know the outcome of the game?
Yeah, I mean, look, you said you're not watching, you know, you're like most of America because they've sort of tuned this out. I always say this, the Democrats' impeachment didn't start with the July 25th phone call this past summer. Impeachment started before the president was even elected. They started going after President Trump in July of 2016 when they went to the FISA court and they got the warrant to go spy on his campaign. So when the FBI did, that's when it started. And they've been after this president ever since. I think the American people get it. They know that the Democrats don't have a case. The facts are on the president's side. The Constitution's on the president's side. The lack of due process in the House, that argument's on the president's side. And we know the outcome of this. It's ridiculous. We're going to get through it. But the sad thing is they're not going to quit. They have just made that claim. They're going to keep coming after this president because they don't like it. I say it this way. When you drain the swamp fights back. And that's what we're seeing. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to continue to see that instead of us getting things done that we should be focused on.
I got to ask you, we talked about wrestling. I know you've said that there's nothing to it, but you were at Ohio State. Do you feel like you've done anything wrong in some of the lawsuits surrounding your wrestling case?
Not one bit. I mean, you go talk to the vast majority of the athletes, you go talk to every single coach, and they've all said the same thing I have, and the reason they say that's because it's the truth. I mean, this idea that somehow I wouldn't stand up for our athletes if I thought they were being harmed is ridiculous. I've taken on the FBI, I've taken on the IRS, I took on John Boehner, Speaker of the House from my own state, my own party. The idea that we're not going to stand up for the guys you're coaching is just ridiculous. The two people who said that I knew something about this, one of them spent like 18 months in prison for fraud. So, you know, you can really trust me. The other one has completely taken down all his social media. This referee taking down all his social media posts after he had, in his lawsuit. And Shazam remembered something from 20-some years ago that had never said anything about it even a year and a half ago when this story broke. But this is how it goes, unfortunately. When the mainstream press tries to go after you, it's unfortunately part of the deal these days.
How big of a sports fan is Donald Trump?
He loves sport. He loves the UFC.
Are you a UFC guy? Did you watch Conor McGregor fight?
My boys are two boys who both wrestle for the Badgers as well, and they're the biggest UFC fans. They love it. So I'm not quite as big, but they're making me. They said, you got to watch this stuff more, Dad. And you see a lot of wrestlers, who go into it and do well. But McGregor, unbelievable what he did to Cerrone the other night. So, yeah, the president loves that. Him and he's tight with Dana White, and he loves all sports. He was at the national championship game in college football and at the World Series, and of course he's at the UFC fight up in Madison Square Garden not too long ago.
All right, last question for you. Appreciate you coming on, Congressman Jim Jordan. Who wins the Super Bowl, Chiefs or 49ers?
Chiefs. I mean, look, I also like the Packers since I spent time up in Madison, Wisconsin, and this Mahomes guy is like Brett Favre Jr. He's just he plays like we all when we were kids playing in the backyard, which is, for a guy like me who likes to watch sports, you like to see that kind of. I saw this thing. I was working out. It was like last week or something, and they had Andy Reid, Favre, and Mahomes on there talking about their careers and the crazy plays, and I didn't realize that Mahomes had like thrown a left-handed touchdown pass.
Oh yeah, it's incredible.
Favre was making a thing, and he goes, because they were throwing all the crazy things they'd done, and Favre goes, yeah, but I've never thrown a touchdown pass left-handed, and I was just laughing as I was working out watching this thing.
Outstanding stuff. Appreciate you coming on. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim_Jordan, a congressman there. Good luck with the impeachment trial continuing, and thanks for spending time with us.
You bet. Thank you, Clay. Keep it up. Take care.
Yeah, that is Jim Jordan, congressman from Ohio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Most popular documentary in America right now, one of the most popular television programs, if you want to call it a television program, is the Netflix documentary on Aaron Hernandez. 3 hours. It's been on the front page, been up for a week. The number of you who have watched it is crazy. Dan Wetzel, who's a regular guest on this program, Yahoo Sports national columnist, he is an executive producer on this program. He is also the primary talking head discussing the Aaron Hernandez cases as they wind themselves through trial. Tom Brady thoughts, Tim Tebow thoughts. It's really a well-done documentary trying to answer the question of why Aaron Hernandez's life turned in this direction. How did he become a serial murderer and take these lives of these innocent people? We have a great Wins and Losses podcast, Outkick the Coverage. It's a podcast exclusive. This week, I focused with Dan Wetzel. If you enjoy what we're about to talk about, you need to stop everything you're doing and go download the Wins and Losses podcast. Again, it's a podcast exclusive. We don't play those interviews, whether it's Kirk Herbstreit, Paul Feinbaum, Colin Cowherd, Mike Leach. We got a huge collection now of these long-form interviews focused on wins and losses. How does a documentary get made? So many different angles we go into with Dan Wetzel. But here's a big discussion point of that conversation on the Aaron Hernandez documentary, and it begins now. The most riveting part of the documentary to me is the jailhouse phone conversations that are all taped where you can hear. You don't obviously get to sit and have an interview with Aaron Hernandez. You see him in trial. He's a huge part of this story. But other than, like archival footage and interviews with him, the part of the documentary that brings him alive is these jailhouse conversations with several different people. His fiance and his daughter, which are heartbreaking. His mom, which is just unbelievable, their relationship and the way those conversations would go. His agent, who basically sounds like a typical agent, and some of his friends, and former teammates who make appearances on these. I never really thought about it, but all of these are archived and taped. How do you go about hearing those? How many hours of footage did you guys go through to end up with however many minutes you used in the documentary?
Well, I agree. They're the key to the documentary to me. First of all, it does bring Aaron's voice in. Yep. I don't think a viewer would, fault anybody for not, like, why don't you,
That's the holy crap moments to me that happened most frequently. Right. Like, I knew the story from the having read your columns and obviously followed this story, but hearing his conversations with the people closest to him, that was the, oh my God, I can't believe this is real.
Well, they're more powerful than an actual interview, because yes. In an interview, he's not going to talk like that.
Right.
We didn't know the level of discord between he and his mother.
Right.
Now, you knew there was tension there. People would tell you that because, after his father died, it's just there's a falling out, right?
She seems like an awful human being in this documentary.
I mean, yeah, I don't, she sounds however she sounds. I'll just say that.
I mean, if you were a parent, let's just put it this way. If you were a parent and you went back and listened to your conversations with your kids, and granted, this is not the sum total of it, right? These are excerpts. But if you heard your conversation and it sounded like that, you would be like, I'm the worst parent who's ever lived, right? Like, I wouldn't be able to get out of bed if that's what I sounded like talking to my son on a documentary.
The emotion and the rawness of those obviously are pretty incredible. And you add, because of that, you are able to really add an understanding that of all the different things, our challenge was to try to explain Aaron Hernandez without excusing Aaron Hernandez.
Yes.
We tried to be extremely clear. Aaron Hernandez made these decisions. Aaron Hernandez ruined people's lives, ended people's lives, ruined people's lives who did not know him and those who did know him. He was an absolute wreck to what he did to so many people. And we tried to spend as much time as possible honoring the victims and making Odin Lloyd, more than just a name, and Safira Furtado and Daniel De Abreu, more than just a name, right? Oh, I killed this guy, but let's focus on the star. Well, you know what? These guys are stars too. And so I don't know where we were with that, but so
the jailhouse interviews.
To explain him, you get an explanation and you realize that the relationship with his mother is dysfunctional, right? And I mean, he's literally saying it. He's like, I can't talk to you. He's basically, I want to tell you who I am and I can't trust you and all the different things. So you would never get that in an interview. I mean, there's no way he's going to say that type of stuff. Or she's, so to get those kind of those things. And the other part I thought was really interesting from the conversations is, here's a guy, he fooled everybody in his life. Nobody really knew the whole Aaron Hernandez. They might know this part about him. They didn't know this part, whatever. It doesn't seem like anybody really knew him fully. And if you listen to the conversations, I don't know how many there are, 8, 9, 10, he has a different tone of voice and a different way of talking to every single person.
Yeah.
He's just a totally different guy when he's talking to one or the other. And I get some of that. Okay, you're not going to talk to your mom like you're going to talk to your college buddies, remembering some, funny time. But it's a different tone of voice. It's a different pot. I mean, everything's different. And that part to me was pretty fascinating, because the true thing is, who is Aaron Hernandez? I don't know that anyone knows. And that's why throughout his life, he stunned people with things, all the way down to his death, where the people who are talking to him the day before he dies are like, he couldn't have done it. It's not plausible. His own attorneys and fiance are like, he didn't commit suicide. He did. He just never gave anybody the full story.
So back to the jailhouse recordings, I didn't even know that you could get those, right? And that they transcribe them all and that they keep them all and that they're accessible to other individuals. Did you know that? Like, how did you come about discovering that those were out there and that you could use them in a documentary?
I knew. They don't always give them out. The police, I mean, if you ever call a jail or have someone call, they'll say your call's being recorded.
Yes, right.
So, you know, I mean, it's like calling the, you know, whatever you call the electric company, and they say your call being recorded. You don't kind of just think about it. But generally, you're not going to get them out publicly because right. there are appeals and different things. Because
so if he hadn't killed himself, you wouldn't have had the ability to get these?
I don't know. You file, it's very tricky. Freedom of Information Acts are very tricky and can be a long legal process. And we weren't the only ones. There's a lot of meat, particularly the Boston Globe did yeoman's work on this and to get some of the calls. We did not have every call ever made in any way. I think there were like 900 phone calls or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, but it is a difficult process to get that kind of information, but it's public record, and at least in Massachusetts, we were able to get them. And but my guess is that they would have been denied if he's appealing because they're part of evidence in a case.
Yes.
But clearly, I mean, the police listen to everything that's going on those calls because they literally are shaping their strategy on it. They're looking for codes. They comb over it, you know, especially, you know, when he's talking to whatever. I mean, let's say there was a jailhouse call where he kind of insinuates something about, like, Shayana in that box. Like, hey, you know, he did solid. Just anything that they could then use as evidence. So, never talking to anyone in jail, dear listener. Watch what you're saying. So, I think that's it. But they were, to me, the most important part of taking this to the next level of storytelling.
Now, you don't hear from Tom Brady. You don't hear from Tim Tebow, obviously the two quarterbacks who were most closely associated with Aaron Hernandez, both when he was at Florida Gators and then also with the New England Patriots. But you hear from him in interviews, archival, as they're asked about it in real time as these stories develop. You even hear a pretty incredible outtake of Rob Gronkowski being asked about him, where like he basically threatens to end the conversation in the interview. If they ask him about it. I'm assuming you guys went out and said and tried to get interviews with other teammates, but you get a couple of the guys that people really don't know that well who would sit and talk about him. How many people did you request and how many no's did you get from the NFL universe and the college football universe surrounding Aaron Hernandez?
You know, I don't know because I wasn't the only person working on that. So yeah. I wouldn't know how many, but you know, there are not a lot of yeses. There's not a lot of people that are dying to attach themselves to Aaron Hernandez. And, you know, I was talking to Tebow about something else and I asked him about it. And he was pretty good about, you know, just, you know, he had an interesting thing. He said, when he was at Florida, he's, you know, almost every day he'd go to like the Children's Hospital, like after practice or do some kind of outreach. I mean, it's Tebow, right?
Yeah, right.
And he said, I think the player who came along, I would try to get people to come. And he says, I think the player who came the most was Aaron Hernandez. Like, you know, like there's this kind heart to, like, he's like, I don't know. You know, I think in fairness, you know,
That would have been incredible if Tebow had said that on the documentary, right?
Like, yeah. I don't blame
Tebow.
Because it just goes to what you're saying, which is what
a chameleon he is.
Right. Who is this guy? Yeah, so he's over there with the sick kids at the Gainesville Hospital with Tebow, but then you know this is what he became. I don't know how much Tom Brady knew him. You know, like football's a weird. They work together, but not. It's a weird sport. It's a weird locker room. There's long off seasons. It's not like you're traveling together all the time. Like in baseball or something, and even then, it's like man, I don't blame them. And then I think there's a part in there where like Zagotis is his high school friend, who you know really was his friend his whole life. Not Sanssouci and his dad, but yeah. The other guy. And he's like, I was kind of worried about stuff with Aaron, but you know, I had never heard him before. No, you know, and I think anybody who saw Hernandez or if you were like. You know, you might be like, ah, that guy might be partying too much, or that guy, you know, I don't know. you might think, you know, if he doesn't straighten up, he, you know, maybe there's a DUI, maybe there's a bar fight. You know, the stuff you hear every day on the you know, here's the update. So and so from the Vikings was arrested. You know, you're not sitting there going, boy, I think Hernandez, you know, was involved in a drive-by shooting. You know, or that if he doesn't change the way he acts a little bit,
he's going to become a serial killer.
Yeah, he's gonna execute someone in a field near his house. Like the crimes are, in hindsight, everyone looks back and goes, oh, they should have seen this come. How could you ever see this coming? Like, this is so beyond. And in the building, like, you know, everybody, every teammate I have spoken to, everyone who has, they've done other interviews. People don't want to necessarily sit down and be the face on a Netflix documentary, and I totally get it. But they, oh, you know, the guy showed up on time. He was in shape. He loves football. He played hard. Like, the Patriots gave him a $40 million contract. They hand those out. He was still on a rookie deal.
Yeah.
He was making fourth round money, $500,000 a year. He was the biggest bargain in the NFL those first 2 years. And they gave him that deal and said, we're going to build our team around you, Gronk, and basically Brady. Not because, like, they don't do that unless they 100% believe in you. Like, I mean, like, the most telling, the best proof that Aaron Hernandez was a chameleon and the Patriots didn't know is that they risked so much on him. Because they wouldn't have thought he's going to be a murderer and get arrested and then we can cut him. It would be like, this guy's shaky and we could take a cap hit, he doesn't perform. Like, that, they don't give that deal unless they believe in you. This is Bill Belichick. He would have just traded him if he thought he didn't want to get rid of him. You know, even when Hernandez was like, you know, I want to, you know. So they, in the building and in his daily life, he was coming across as someone who had it together. He just didn't, particularly at those last 6 months, really after the double homicide things rolled and then the fight with Bradley. Everything just went haywire that offseason.
Were you in the courtroom when Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, testified?
I was. It was amazing.
So in the documentary, that was one of the moments where I think they say he looks back for Robert Kraft to come in six different times. And to me, I don't know if it struck you this way, but you could tell even that Aaron Hernandez and whatever else he's done in his life, and obviously he was a serial killer. I mean, he made a lot of bad decisions. He seemed to really like Robert Kraft, right? I mean, like, even on trial for murder, the way he's looking back to see Robert Kraft come in, it was like Kraft was a grandfather or a father-like figure to him. Did you pick up on that in the courtroom?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think, you know, I think we wrote about it at the time.
It was clear that this was like dad's home. And I'm
he cared what Robert Kraft was going to say about him and what he thought about him, even as he's on trial for murder.
Yep. And it was like the disappointment. It's, you know, like when you're a kid and you're someone, they yell, you shouldn't have done this. And the worst thing that your parents can say, I swear, is, I'm disappointed in you.
I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. It's a great dad line, great mom line.
Great dad line. I use it now, right?
Yeah.
So it is. And you could see and feel that. It was like no other. He had people coming into that courtroom, two trials, literally saying the worst things ever about him.
Yep.
Just, I mean, they're just trashing him. And he's either staring them down or just like, whatever, I don't care. And then in comes Robert Kraft, and you could tell it was like, I disappointed this guy. This guy was fair to me. He was good to me. He made my dream come true, and boom. And this is why the documentary, I think, is such a great medium for this story, because people say, well, this stuff's been in print. I wrote all this stuff. The Boston Globe podcast, Gladiator, is phenomenal. It's a great crime podcast, and if you're into this, listen to that, too, if you're really into this case. But it's a podcast. You have to see it, right? Like, I can explain it as best I can, but you see that and you're like, oh my goodness, look at that look on his face. And then the amazing thing about it, Kraft just buries him. And a lot of one of the problems of this trial was the way it was covered nationally on the cable channels, and this happens with these trials, is they have the same like the same kind of hosts of these shows and the same three or four talking heads on, like, you know, and they aren't there and they don't really know the trial. They're just like, they're lawyers who then work all day and then they chop on TV and go, oh, this was important, this wasn't.
Yeah, right.
And people missed when Kraft laid out the alibi that Aaron Hernandez said, I was at a club, I hope the timeline comes out. It was like a gasp. Everybody who was there was like, oh, no, this is devastating for Hernandez. It's like, I hope the timeline comes out, because when that murder happened, I was in a club, and we had already heard for weeks every single step of Aaron Hernandez's day. Like, yep. They had him on cell phone. The cell phones tracked his thing, or they had cameras. He leaves at 7:58. He goes to dinner in Providence with Shea. He comes back. He's at a gas, like, every single thing. He never went to a club that night. And how did he know the time? And when he did that, it was game over for Aaron Hernandez. So in the most unbelievable bit, Robert Kraft put Aaron Hernandez away. And because Robert Kraft was in an unimpeachable witness, because it was like, why is this guy lying? And he's the only one that Hernandez talked to in that time that was going to talk. And so it was a devastating bit and just a unbelievable twist to have the owner of the Patriots basically. And then because of that, the defense had been arguing he wasn't there, which wasn't going to work anyway, amongst tons of evidence that suggested he was there, including like four guys getting a car where they drop him off on the way or,
right,
you know, then pick him up later. He had his sneakers. He had these his DNA's on the gum. He had these rare sneakers, these Jordan 11s or something, size 13. Like, you know, they bring in the Jordan expert. There aren't that many of these things made.
Right.
There's a shoebox with the exact same sneaker.
It's 1 mile right. from his home.
Right, all this different stuff. But once Kraft did that, they end up switching their entire defense and go, yeah, he was there.
But he didn't do it.
He didn't do it. The other guys did it, which is his defense in every single thing. Every time, like, in a 5-year period, there were four shootings that at least at some point or another, someone said you were at. The one in Gainesville, I don't know, maybe he wasn't there, maybe he was, but at least three, and every one of them he said, no, the other guys, I was there, but the other guy did.
That's Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports national columnist, executive producer of the new Aaron Hernandez documentary that is up on Netflix that many of you are watching.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Lots of great feedback from you guys on the Jim Jordan interview. You can find him at Jim_Jordan. My theory is, look, I'll be put on any Republican or Democrat with a decent-sized audience and talk about sports with them, because I think sports is one of the last things that unites the country. And I think you guys enjoy having a little bit different kind of guest sometimes. So phenomenal feedback on that. You can go listen to it on the podcast. I right now have on my television screen, as I'm sure they do in the studio in LA, Roger Federer was down 8-5 in the fifth set tiebreak in Australia. He now has a match point right now up 9-8. And I believe it is Millman who is serving. I'll give you an update there as this comes down. Already, Naomi Osaka and Serena Williams have lost down under in Australia. And right now, as we speak, Roger Federer with a match point. And it looks like, let's see here, live broadcast, Federer just won it. Wow. Winner, incredible shot. Roger Federer comes back from 8-5 down in the fifth set tiebreak to win it 10-8 over John Millman from Australia in five sets. That match just ending down under in Australia right now as we were finishing off the program. Eddie Garcia, I would imagine that'll be a part of the updates for the rest of the day. What you got for us?
Yeah, and they had said earlier that Serena Williams and Roger Federer had never lost on the same day in a major tournament.
Oh, that's amazing stat.
They played in a lot of them, but that was avoided with Roger Federer in that epic five-set win over John Millman, the Aussie ranked 47th in the world. As you mentioned earlier, in case you missed it, though, 15-year-old golf.
All right. We finish off the program here. We're going to be live in Miami starting on Monday, all week, Monday through Friday from South Beach down at the Miami Beach Convention Center. We'll be live with the radio program Outkick 6 to 9. And then we'll also be live, huge four-block set that Fox Sports is building down in Loomis Park on the beach. My understanding, based on the renditions I have seen, you can watch Lock It In live there from 4:30 to 5:30 Eastern if you are going to be in town for the Super Bowl at all during that week, or if you live in South Florida and you want to come down and check it out. Tickets are free. I'll tweet out the tickets this weekend if you are interested in South Florida and you want to come watch Lock It In live. Me, Cousin Sal, Todd Furman, and Rachel Bonetta, outdoor set that should be pretty phenomenal. But again, Roger Federer, I'm told, just came back from 8-4 down. I was not looking when he was down 8-4. I thought it was 8-5. All the way back from 8-4 down in the fifth set tiebreak to win 10-8. Loaded show. Encourage you to go check out the podcast. You heard Dan Wetzel talking about all of the mess surrounding the Aaron Hernandez case. That's a Netflix documentary. Huge podcast up talking about that. Jim Jordan, what'd you guys think? Pretty good, right? Congressman from Ohio, whether you're Republican or Democrat, I thought that went pretty well. Feedback is phenomenal on that as well. Much like when we had Tulsi Gabbard on before, we're not trying to be partisan here. Just try to get good and interesting guests from the world of sports, business, otherwise, politics as well. What'd you guys think? What kind of letter grade would you give that?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised how much of a Packers fan / Mahomes fan he was. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I thought that went pretty well. All right. Appreciate all of you. Again, you can go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss anything. We're going to have loaded shows for you from Miami. Thanks for making Outkick such a rollicking success. Continue to share the show. Download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss anything at all. A little bit depressing. I don't really count the Pro Bowl as a football game. First time without a real football game in a long time. Ready to talk about the Super Bowl all next week, but also already missing football.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.